fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak. There's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
I think the year was about 1979. Darren had a Camaro. He was had T-tops. He was in high school, and his favorite album was In Through the Outdoor by Led Zeppelin. That's what I always think of when I think of free agency, In Through the Outdoor.
How old do you think I am?
Darren, just go with me. It's theater of the mind here on Cardinals Underground, azcardinals.com. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard over there. Kyle, have you ever heard of Led Zeppelin?
I know who Led Zeppelin is.
Okay, that's good.
Barely.
That's good. In Through the Outdoor. So in, here we're going to go. And just in no particular order, and we're not talking all free agents, but guys who are back on the roster. Chandler Jones, Carlos Dansby, Jermaine Gresham, Antoine Bethea, Phil Dawson, A.Q. Shipley, Andre Ellington, and most recently Jarvis Jones. Out, Calais Campbell, Tony Jefferson, D.J. Swearinger, Kevin Minter, Earl Watford. And this is a real question. Darren Urban, where do you start? I mean, how do you make sense of this? I mean, there are a lot of names who are coming and going.
Well, officially, Kevin Minter is not gone yet.
Okay.
Probably, but after Carlos Dansby, probably. You know, the three of us have been talking about Calais Campbell and Tony Jefferson being gone for a long time now. So by the time that actually happened, I kind of feel like it was old news.
But in terms of impact, yeah, I'd probably start with Calais and Tony Jefferson and then Chandler Jones. Somewhere in
yes.
there's your top three.
Well, and there's no question about that, and we kind of knew that. I mean, to be honest, since the last time we talked, the biggest deal to me was the fact that Chandler Jones got an extension. Because I'll be honest, at that point the last time we talked, I did not think Chandler Jones was going to be getting an extension this year. I thought he was going to be playing under the franchise tag. I thought that might hinder them, and I thought it was going to be hard to get a long-term deal done with him, to be honest.
In fact, Chandler Jones, not only a Cardinal, but it's going to be a new and improved role as he sees it, a leadership role.
Being here my first year, I was kind of shadowing a little bit. You know, I was trying to feel my way around, especially when I first got here. Now knowing, you know, that I'm going to be here, you know, I kind of can change roles a little bit, be more of a leader, be more vocal. But I feel like I played decent. You never say you had a perfect season, so there's always room for improvement for sure.
You know, Kyle, I'd say that Chandler Jones did improve over the course of last year just in his run defense, if nothing else. I mean, that Buffalo game was not stellar. He seemed to be much better at setting the edge and being stout against the run in the second half of the season. I expect more of that out of Chandler Jones.
And it's funny, that was the big knock. You hear from Patriots fans all the time, hey, this guy disappears after 8 or 10 games. He's a shadow of himself the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 games of the season. But I think you're right. I think he started slowly, but after that, I thought he came on well. And there were ebbs and flows to his season. Like certain games, he played better than others. I think against Seattle, he was really good. And in that very last game against the Rams, he was really good. So I think he wants to be more consistent, where every single game, it would be great if he had multiple pressures. And the sacks aren't always going to be there. Whether he has 0, 1, or 2 sacks in a game, it's hard to know when those are going to come. But to be in the backfield consistently, and then you mentioned the run defense, when you have Marcus and Chandler, neither of them are great against the run, but if they can just do okay in that situation, I think that's important moving forward.
Yeah, and I agree, the consistency, and I'm glad he said the consistency, and this is no knock on Chandler Jones. I mean, you've got to get it where you can get it, and you've got to perform well against the players that you should perform well against. But the reality is, I'm like, Kyle just said it. He did really well against the Rams, really well against the Seahawks. What are we talking about there in terms of offensive linemen?
Mm-hmm.
Not very good. So what you need is what you'd like to see is that consistency going forward against everybody. And he's not going to be great every game. Nobody's great every game. And that goes across the board. But at this point, again, when you sign for this kind of money, $52, $53 million in guarantees, the expectations jump. And that tends to put some pressure on a guy, and we'll see what happens.
Why did Chandler Jones get the big money and the big extension that some other guys didn't get? Simply age, mm-hmm. the position, his skill set?
of the above.
Yeah, all those. I mean, age, he's at the age at 27 where you think his prime is going to be the next 3 years, let's say, so you're willing to pay for that. And then at that point in the contract, the Cardinals have more flexibility. If he keeps it up like a Calais Campbell, you can keep on that contract and keep going. If he falls off at the age of 30 or 31, you can maneuver and get out of the deal. But it's a good age. You're at a position that is, besides quarterback, that's the position everybody wants because you can pressure the quarterback at outside linebacker. And he's also physically what you want, where he's long. People talk about Marcus Golden, where he has the shorter arms, and that's why he was a second-round pick, because he doesn't have the natural things that Chandler Jones does. So you figure you have all the measurables, you have the age, and you have the position, and that's why you're willing to give him more guaranteed money than probably anybody's gotten in Cardinals history, I'm guessing.
And on a purely financial level too, Paul, and we've talked about this, this new contract lowers his cap number for this year by $4.5 million-ish or whatever it is. So you gain cap space, and that's important as you go forward too, because you know I will say this, and I know there are fans out there that complained about it, especially given the timing of Chandler Jones signing just about at the beginning of free agency. Why couldn't they get it done a week ahead of time so they could have done something with Calais Campbell? Well, number one, once they tagged Chandler Jones, you can't tag anybody else, so the tag was out the door, and I don't think they were that close to a deal back then, and I do think both sides probably gave some by the time they got this done. So I do think it took the tag to kind of hone in both sides to get this done. I don't think Calais Campbell would have been there. And I don't think they really wanted to franchise Calais Campbell, to be honest. It might have been doable maybe to keep him around one more year, but I still think that would have been too much of a drag on the cap.
And there's no doubt they wanted Calais Campbell. The day after the season ended, Steve Keim called Calais Campbell into his office, said, "We want you back. I'm not ready to talk numbers yet. We want you back." They just couldn't get it done. I mean, the numbers were, I mean, Chandler Jones ended up getting $53 million guaranteed, reportedly.
Yep.
And the total value of his deal exceeds $80
million. Which I'll never see, but that's
correct. You know. But I mean, the numbers are huge, I guess is what I'm saying. And it has a trickle down effect.
Well, and Calais, the numbers Calais ended up getting were pretty huge too.
Tremendous.
I mean, he got $30 million guaranteed over the first 2 years for Jacksonville, which almost is about the same amount of the total package the Cardinals wanted to give Calais. And that's, they just money whipped him, and that's how it is.
And getting back to the leadership role, which Chandler Jones knows he's going to have to assume, look, if you're going to be one of the top leaders, you have to be one of the top players, and that means getting the sack numbers. In fact, he talked about the potential for the Cardinals' pass rush.
I mean, the sky's the limit for our pass rush, and I feel like last year we just scratched the surface. We led the league in sacks, but Marcus is a tremendous player, and he's young. He's still learning, and I'm learning from him, honestly. We learn from each other. Even though we have different body types, there's a lot of moves or different techniques to get by offensive tackles that really help the both of us.
And, of course, the Cardinals went from, what, 20th in the NFL in sacks to number one in sacks with 48 in 2016. Now, it's the third member of that rotation that's going to change. Alex Okafor signs a one-year deal reportedly worth up to $3 million with the Saints, and on board comes Jarvis Jones, a former first-round pick 2013 of the Pittsburgh Steelers, 6'3", 248. And so he's going to be basically that same role as an Alex Okafor, right? He'll be that third outside linebacker.
Well, and once Alex Okafor went to the Saints, you needed somebody in that role. And they wanted Okafor back, and I think that would have been their top choice because he's been here, which, given everything Alex had been through with kind of been up and down and dealing with injuries and playing through the biceps injury last year and obviously the infamous toe injury before the playoffs, you know, I thought maybe they, I wasn't sure if they would want him back, but they, I think they did. He wanted a chance to start. He gets a chance in New Orleans. And now you got a guy like Jarvis Jones, who not only can play the same role, but you start looking at how everything ties together when Jarvis Jones has been mentored by Brenton Buckner since he was 14 years old and all these other free agents, you know, Phil Dawson's in Cleveland when Bruce Arians was there and Anton Bethea played in Indianapolis when Bruce was there. And Carlos, obviously, Dansby has a history here. I mean, you start to see a definite thread over who they're bringing in.
And that makes me feel good. When Larry Foote played with Jarvis Jones, his last year in Pittsburgh was Jones' rookie year. So, you know, at least there's a little bit of inside info and knowledge on that.
Yeah, and he's a guy who was a first-round pick. Big things were expected of him in Pittsburgh, and he obviously didn't pan out and I'm sure Steelers fans aren't happy with the way his career went, but he comes here, you're not signing him to this lavish deal, so you get him in, he's more of a reserve, but he's also in a situation where he's obviously got physical tools, and now with that situation where you put a third linebacker in third and long situations, it's a place where you can really excel as a player when the team is doing an exotic blitz or different things where they can try to find what your skill set is and tailor the play to it. So I think it's a good opportunity for him. He might not play a bunch of snaps, but the times he is in the game, I think he's going to have a chance to make an impact.
So Jones at outside linebacker. We have a familiar name and face at inside linebacker. Yeah. In fact, I want everyone to hear his voice. Darren already hinted who it is, but go ahead, listen to this.
Man, I'm ready to get back in front of the Red Sea. The fans, they still wow. I love it. I know the energy is going to be there, you know, so especially with what you got the pass rushers going, the opportunity is going to be there. You see a lot of bird dancing around and flying around, you know, so I'm looking forward to it.
The unmistakable voice of Carlos Stansby, gentlemen, not once, not twice, but now the third time with the Arizona Cardinals, which according to Mark Dalton, going back to 1898, it's the first time ever that a Cardinal has returned for a third stint with this franchise.
And according to Carlos Stansby, third time's a charm. So.
Know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? That's huge. That's huge, man.
Okay, now wait a minute. Speaking of three, you asked him. You had the audacity, Kyle Odegaard, to front up Carlos Stansby and ask the question, are you still a three-down linebacker? And here's his answer.
Oh, without a doubt. Three-down linebacker, man. I'm one interception away from being a legend, man. Why wouldn't I be a three-down linebacker? That'd be silly of me to say I'm just a two-down linebacker.
All right. So that was the money quote. There's no doubt about it. Darren, would you agree? That was the money quote from the press conference.
I absolutely would agree with it. And it's funny because when he said it, well, first of all, everybody laughed. Not just at Kyle, but it was funny that Kyle had to play the straight man there because it did look like.
But it was a pertinent question.
Of course it does. He's going to be 36. He's going to be 36. That couldn't have been answered any more Carlos Dansby-esque than it was.
Yes.
And you know, obviously for people who don't know, the one interception that he referred to, which we all had to kind of figure out what the heck he was talking about because, of course, Carlos didn't explain it either.
But it's Adrian Wilson-esque.
Yes.
The 2020 club.
It would be his next interception would be his 20th of his career. He was talking a lot of the 2020 club, but he's already over 40 sacks in his career. And there's only five other guys that have done 40 sacks and 20 interceptions in his career. Ray Lewis, Wilbur Marshall, and I'm drawing a blank on the other two guys. Donnie Edwards, that was one of them. And for him to get there, and it's funny to me because and Paul, you've been around this the whole time. Kyle, you remember from 2013 on stint number two, mm-hmm. but having been around Carlos his whole career, there's an endearing lack of
humility.
Humility, I think, is the great. I mean. For him to say I'm one interception from being a legend, that is so Carlos Stansby.
You know what, though? Can I psychoanalyze this team from 2016? Because I kind of rolled my eyes and I laughed and I, you know, hashtag Los being Los, and I loved it. And it was just great theater. There's no doubt about it. But then I really thought about it. It sort of washed over me. And 24 hours later, I realized the Cardinals need Carlos Stansby. Yes. They need that mindset. I mean, he was talking to Bertrand Barry on his radio show about how he has never forgotten about the last 90 seconds of the Super Bowl. That to this day, on an almost daily basis, it eats at him. The Cardinals need that. Mm-hmm. They need that hunger. They need that bravado. They need that confidence. If you believe BA's diagnosis, then one of the reasons they lost a number of close games, whereas they were winning them the years before, because the confidence was lacking. Guess what? Carlos Stansby does not lack for confidence.
Yeah, I think bravado is the key one to me, where he's going to go out there just like the press conference. He still thinks he's the best linebacker in the NFL, even though he's 35, going to be 36 this season. And
he thinks he's going to the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and he hasn't made a Pro Bowl.
But Paul, we've been around this for, he's been talking about that for forever.
I know, but he not only does he buy in, but I mean, he is absolute, sort of his response to Kyle's question. Yeah. I mean, he is
incredulous.
Miffed. Yes, incredulous. Yeah. Thank you.
And then when you're in a situation like you're in Seattle and the game is a 3-point game in the fourth quarter, you have Carlos Stansby to keep everybody loose in the fourth quarter because he's going to tell them, hey, we're going to win this game. I'm probably going to get a pick six and this game's over. But it helps everybody where you're not too tight. I think it's a good pickup.
Is that John Candy in the huddle or in the stands?
And you know what? When it is game time and everything's flying around, they're following Carlos Dansby. It's sort of like Band of Brothers. I'm going to go to Band of Brothers, and you had the sergeant who, in wartime, everyone's following the sergeant. They're not following the highly decorated, academically trained major or general. They're following the sergeant who's been there and done that and has proven himself to all the troops.
It's interesting because I 100% agree with that with Carlos. And it's funny, again, Carlos being Carlos, somebody talked to him about the leadership, and he's talking about how he's picked all the teams since he was 6 years old. And every time he doesn't want to be a leader, he gets dragged back into being a leader. Yeah. And it's just everybody sees him as that. But he is one. And when you add in Bethea in particular, and I briefly talked to defensive coordinator James Betcher about this, and who was in Indy that 1 year with Bruce and was with Bethea. They really believe Bethea brings a lot of that leadership to the locker room. And you put those two guys together after some of the issues they might have had last year, you know, I think it's important to them.
All right, well, here was Carlos Dansby on that leadership question.
I've been doing this a long time. I've seen a lot. I've done a lot. I've had a lot of success. And, like, the leadership thing, it's just natural for me. Like, I've been a leader since, like I said, I was 6 years old. It's natural, man, and I embrace it.
And you know what? He's not the only one who embraces it and values it. I mean, Steve Keim was sitting in this very studio in the Big Red Rage and talking about how he needed that leadership, needed to identify that in the offseason, both in free agency and in the draft, football intelligence. And, Kyle, I mean, Carlos Dansby checks every one of those boxes.
Yeah, and that's always an interesting thing for me to look at, where I like looking at the numbers part of the game, and I don't put a lot of stock in the leadership thing, but obviously Steve Keim feels like that was a missing element last year, where I'm more looking at, hey, they had bad luck and they had bad bounces. He feels like it was a situation where we didn't have enough vocal leaders, whether it's in the locker room or whether it's on the field during the game, to lead the way. So it is interesting to see if next season they get back to what they were the previous 2 or 3 years when they were winning. I think maybe he feels like with Jerod Powers and Rashad Johnson in the secondary especially, they were the leaders those previous few years. Maybe athletically they weren't doing it as well as some of the guys that replaced them, but they always had everybody's backs and they were always leading the way. So I think he's trying to get back to that a little bit with Dansby and Bethea, and I'm interested to see if it will make a big difference.
You know, and when we talk about these free agent signings, and you know, maybe I'm taking a little bit of a stretch here, but they almost reverse engineered the leadership a little bit at kicker, because while I don't think anybody's going to be following Phil Dawson on into battle necessarily,
right?
I think the fact that, with all due respect to Chandler Catanzaro and what he went through last year, and I do think it was a huge deal when Carson Palmer went up to him those couple times and said, "We still need you," and everything. You're not going to need that with Phil Dawson. You've taken that part out of it. You've taken that off the shoulders of a Carson Palmer, let's say. As a leader, he's not going to have to worry about the kicker in that regard, or he shouldn't, based on history. And I think that's another step that you've helped the leadership in the locker room with a changing kicker, even if the kicker isn't necessarily going to be one of the forefront leaders.
Well, you think of Phil Dawson, and then you realize he's 42 years of age. And to put that in context, he goes back to his days with BA, not in Indy, but when Bruce Arians was the offensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns.
BA has a way of instilling confidence in his players. And I can remember even back then, you know, he's so aggressive in how he would call plays. You couldn't help but feed off of that. You know, he plays to win instead of playing not to lose. And he would put me in situations that I really appreciated for a young guy in this league trying to prove myself.
So, Paul, are you going to ask Phil Dawson if he had a Camaro and and was doing stuff at 1979?
Forget Led Zeppelin. He was listening to the Beatles, probably. I mean, that's how far back Phil Dawson goes. Are you kidding me? And, so I got to be sure to get out of his way. See, I'm going to look in the sideline. You always got to stay out of the way of the kicker and the punter, or else you'll pay for it upside the head, okay? But you turn around and you're like, wait a minute, is that a player? Is that a coach? I mean, I'm going to have to make sure. I know that's a player. I'm going to look for the jersey first.
At this point, you may even have to actually make sure that you're not supposed to be on the radio, because doppelganger, Jim Omohundro, Phil Dawson.
Okay, fine. Executive producer of the Arizona Cardinals. And you know what? Former high school kicker, Jim Omohundro.
That's true.
If only he would have followed the Phil Dawson key to longevity and success, it goes something like this.
I put a lot of work in. It's one kick at a time. I mean, it's hard for me to answer that question because I'm always afraid about the next kick. But I think that mentality has served me well. It doesn't matter how many I've made, how long I've played. It's always about the next kick. That kind of attitude may not let you have the most fun on game day, because I'm always about the next kick, but it helps you do your job.
All right, so there's Phil Dawson. By the way, we should note here for accuracy purposes on Cardinals Underground that our Jim Omohundro was honorable mention All-State in Arizona in high school, just
to
let you know.
That's very important.
Now, what was interesting was we all looked at the fact there were four touchbacks. I'm going to leave this to you now, Kyle, because you're the numbers guy, but there's a qualifying context to those four touchbacks that he explained.
Yeah, he was saying that the Niners asked him to kick it directionally, whether they're trying to get more hang time on it to get their players down there and get the teams inside the 25. He didn't get into specifically what they wanted him to do, but he was saying, hey, if you want me to just kick it and get a touchback, I feel like I still have that leg strength to do it. I don't know if, you know, he said he was asked four times and he did four touchbacks. Whether or not that's accurate or not, maybe they wanted him to do it more, maybe not. So I don't think it's a slam dunk that Phil Dawson's going to be your kickoff guy. I think the leg strength question is valid. I don't think he's as good from deep range and field goals,
right.
And that's the big thing. He's an accurate kicker, but he doesn't have the leg of Greg Zuerlein, guys like that. So I think depending on what happens with the punter situation, I know Richie Leone was good at
kickoffs.
They're
both kickers. So, Leone and Wild have both done kickoffs.
So I think you just play that out in the offseason, see who's going to make the team and who's better at it, and then you go that way. But it wouldn't surprise me if it was the punter.
I think the key adjective there is he's a clutch kicker.
Yes.
He's a reliable kicker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how many times have we talked about Bruce Arians' assessment in the heat of the moment at the end of the Rams game saying we missed three damn kicks this year? You know, it's right there. That was just reason enough for making a change of kicker. I think the head coach and the locker room needed to believe that they had a reliable kicker that they could work all offseason, they could work through training camp, and it wouldn't go up in smoke in week one against New England. They need to rely on that guy.
Well, and it was funny to hear Phil Dawson saying that he'd been trying to get here for a while, which that was interesting to me too. Like Kyle said, I mean, we'll see. I mean, if you're going to be looking for a 53-yard field goal with the game on the line, there might be an issue there. And again, that might be where both Weil and or Leone, depending on who wins that job, could be in. I mean, Leone definitely kicked in the CFL. So we'll see where that goes. But I do think that helps them. And now you just got to make sure the mechanism is right with the long snapper and the holder, right?
Well, and you mentioned trying to get here. Think about it. Think of what Phil Dawson has been through with the Niners. Think of what Carlos Dansby has been through with the Browns and then this past season with the Bengals. And then you get to Antoine Bethea back to the Niners. I had a chance to talk with him briefly, and I said, man, you've been through a lot of drama the last 3 or 4 years. And he just sort of nodded his head and said, yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, I think all three of them have mentioned the idea of playing for a winner, where you look at last year didn't go as well as planned, but this team consistently the last 3 or 4 years has been very competitive. A lot of the guys are still around, and they feel like if they can come in and be valuable contributors, the Cardinals are really close to being this playoff contender again. Obviously, in San Francisco, that's years away. So both guys being veterans, but they said he kind of came to a mutual agreement with San Francisco to get released, to get in a better spot. And hopefully when you're a winner like the Cardinals are, you take advantage where you can sign these guys that aren't worried about getting these lavish deals anymore, but can be worth more than what the contract is. Because if Bethea and Dansby both play well, obviously they can outperform what they're getting paid.
In fact, Antoine Bethea said exactly that. I want to win. I want to get another ring. That was a big part of my decision. There was another element to it, though, his relationship with Bruce Arians and James Betcher, which goes back to their Indy days. Here's Antoine Bethea.
Oh, man, just the personality, how much fun they love to have. I remember when, you know, B.A. was the O.C. and just how much trash talking we would do to one another out there at the practice field. So, you know, just that bond that we created when we was out there and when we played twice a year. When I see these guys, it was always love. So definitely great to be back with them.
Yeah, there's Bethea, and he's not the first DB to say that about Bruce Arians. Who, speaking of bravado, he must talk a pretty good game. When the offense is having success in practice, the defense knows about it, apparently, because Gerard Powers has mentioned that most recently as well.
Is anybody really that surprised?
No, no, it isn't. But, you know, it is interesting now. You look at the secondary, minus Tony Jefferson, minus DJ Swearinger. Tyrann Mathieu, we've seen only good things, but it's still a question mark to some degree. I mean, guys, do you have a gut feel? When we get around to the draft, are the Cardinals going to go all in, or are they going to go heavy on secondary, considering that's one of the big strengths of this crop of kids?
Well, I mean, I think there's no question that cornerback is going to be a top three-round pick. That's what I think is going to happen. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be later, but it is supposed to be a deep class in cornerbacks. I wouldn't be completely shocked if they went cornerback in the first round. And I think looking for somebody cheap on the other side from Patrick, but who's good, makes a lot of sense. And I think they might look at a safety too. And there's, look, you still have some other options. You want to see what Harlan Miller can do out in his first year after, you know, our first offseason really training after being drafted. And he showed a couple flashes at the end of the year being safety. And you still have Justin Bethel who might be able to play a role. And Brandon Williams is a third round pick. I mean, I don't know where Brandon Williams is going to go. But you can't invest a third round pick in a guy and completely dismiss him. You can't.
And think about it. I totally failed to cite Marcus Cooper signing with the Bears for really good money.
Yeah. Really good money.
That's the big thing to me is you don't have that security blanket in Marcus Cooper where that's why I think in the draft, like Darren was saying, first round makes a ton of sense if you like a cornerback because Justin Bethel and Brandon Williams both have talent, true, but they haven't proven to be this solid cornerback. And whether it's free agency, whether it's the draft, I think you need definitely one more guy in there.
No doubt.
When it comes to safety, you're a little bit more flexible, but Tyvon Branch is going into his last year of his deal. So if you like a guy, you don't have to reach for a safety, but if you really like one, I think it also makes sense if you want to grab one and then either plug him in this year or use him next season once there's more room.
And let's not forget, too, the offseason and when we play a game that counts for real is a long way away. And last year, yes, it didn't work out the way they wanted with cornerback, and Bethel was hurt all offseason, but they found Marcus Cooper in a trade right before the season started.
Yeah.
And before, if he hadn't gotten hurt, Mike Jenkins would have been the guy, yeah, and they never would have traded for Marcus Cooper. So there's ways to work with that if you get through the offseason and it's not quite where you want it.
All right, if there's another signing, we forgot to mention A.Q. Shipley other than just to mention off the very top. I mean, four-fifths of the Cardinals starting offensive line is back, albeit maybe not necessarily in the same positions when you talk about the tackles, but is right guard still out there? And is there someone still in free agency? Because we've talked about the risk that comes with trying to go with a rookie offensive lineman here these days.
Yeah, I don't think there are any big names, and these offensive linemen all got great deals, so it wouldn't surprise me if they were interested in certain guys but didn't want to pay what it would have cost for a certain guard. So you talk about maybe not drafting one, but you've got Evan Bame, you've got a couple of other guys who saw some experience.
Cole Toner could be interesting. I mean, yeah, Wetzel.
There are guys on the team where you say, hey, we like the progress they've made and we're willing to put them in. That's strictly an evaluation thing from what the coaches have seen. Maybe they feel good about somebody, or maybe they still are looking in free agency because they feel like it would be a big upgrade.
And Jermaine Gresham, let's leave it with Jermaine Gresham. I mean, he got pretty good money on a 4-year deal. And, you know, we talked about how inspirationally was in a lot of ways. He was a catalyst, I guess is the better word for it, on offense. And look, it's a position where they need it. They lost Darren Fells.
Yeah, but I think at this point, for whatever reason, they were ready to move on from Darren Fells. And I could see tight end maybe somewhere in the draft, middle rounds. They do have 2 fifth-round picks too. Maybe you try and find somebody. I mean, they put a lot of money into Jermaine Gresham. They're counting on Jermaine Gresham. So obviously he's going to have to perform. And who knows? I mean, Ifeanyi Momah comes back. He was doing a nice job. And dare I say, there's still Troy Nicholas. And we'll see if he can stay healthy for any amount of time.
Yeah, what is it, Troy Nicholas? What was the number I saw? Was it 6 surgeries in his 3 years in the NFL?
Yeah, all the time. And it's just so many random different things that keep happening to him. He's the nicest guy in the world. You really root for him to succeed. You see the way he's built and the way he can move, and it just feels like, man, just put it all together, stay healthy, and you'll be a good player. But now we're going into the fourth year, and he hasn't done much of anything. So it's, you can't count on him, but it'd be great if he could stay healthy and make his mark.
Him and Andre Ellington, one of those two guys has to emerge this year. Just please, one of those two guys.
And, you know, again, like he was saying about Troy, Andre's the same. They're guys you root for, and they're guys that you don't, you know, I don't think they're doing anything to, I mean, they train hard, and it's not like what they're doing is getting them hurt. It's just God made him that way.
All right, one interception away from being a legend. You need to track that, Kyle. Okay, we need that, more coverage of that.
I guess I'll ask him, are you a legend now? Once he gets that interception,
if he gets that ball, is he gonna like look up and say, "Today I am the greatest"?
Well, Ricky Henderson dropped. Yeah, there you go. Speaking of 1979,
there you go.
We come full circle on Cardinals Underground.